I'm going to now focus on collapsed cases. Regarding extradition, the USA sought the extradition of various persons it claimed to have links with Al-Qaeda and to have contributed to the attacks of September the 11th. For example, the case of Lofty Raisi. One such person that USA sought to extradite was this Algerian pilot. Had he been extradited, he would most likely have been charged with conspiracy to murder and could have faced the death penalty. He was discharged by the Bow Street Magistrates Court in London on April 24th this year after concluding there was not sufficient evidence to support allegations of terrorism and extradite him to the USA. His detention lasted 7 months, 5 of which were spent in Belmarsh High Security Prison before being released on bail. Raisi was accused of training 4 September 11th hijackers, including suspected ringleader Mohammed Attar. In seeking his extradition, the US government claimed that they had sufficient evidence of active, conspiracy-proving correspondence and telecommunications with the September 11th hijackers, as well as video footage with them and proof that they traveled together. Despite such strong allegations, the FBI failed to bring anything apart from minor charges against him. Instead, the US resorted to seeking his extradition on the charges that he lied on an application form for a pilot's license, for failing to declare a knee injury, and a conviction for theft when he was 17. Although these are extraditable offences for which Raisi could have faced a year in prison in the US, these were far, far removed from the initial accusations of links with the events of September the 11th. The US, however, maintained that Raisi was a flight instructor of the hijacker of American Airlines Flight 77 into the Pentagon, Hani Hanjour. An FBI affidavit claimed both had taken flight simulator training at Sawyer Aviation in Arizona together on 5 days in 1998. However, the FBI admitted that it had not determined whether they both actually trained together. Key evidence submitted by the US was what it claimed was video footage of them both together. This claim, however, was dropped after Raisi's lawyer clarified that the footage was in fact poor quality webcam footage of Raisi with his cousin. Further, claims by the prosecution that they had both been in frequent telephone contact were not substantiated. Another claim that Raisi called a suspected Al-Qaeda leader failed when it was discovered that Raisi was at the Paddington police station at the time he supposedly made that call. Moreover, claims by the FBI that Raisi and Hanjour flew in the same aircraft on March 8, 1999 did not correspond with logbooks, which showed that Hanjour flew for 1.5 hours and Raisi flew for 1.7 hours. They claimed that the entry on the logbook was incorrect and should have said March the 9th. The type of evidence put forward was weak and could have easily been clarified by the US authorities without having to go to this point. The failure to do so by the US authorities, as well as the reliance of UK authorities, basing arrests and detentions on such unsubstantiated accusations, shows that the fight against terrorism is being conducted with total disregard for justice or the truth. The tragedy of September the 11th are used to justify indiscriminate targeting of Muslims without any real evidence and severely infringing their civil liberties and basic human rights. Looking at the second issue, prosecution under the Terrorism Act 2000, and in particular the case of Suleiman Zeinulabdin, some of which has already been alluded to. As part of its crackdown on Islamic militants, the UK authorities arrested Suleiman, a chef from Southwest London, under the Terrorism Act 2000. Having spent 10 months in Belmarsh prison, he walked free from the Old Bailey on 9th August this year. Ironically, he was arrested after complaining to the police that he felt vulnerable after a newspaper had published an article about his website. He was accused of inviting Muslims to learn how to use weapons in the pursuit of a holy war on his website, which promoted Sakina Security Services on a course entitled The Ultimate Jihad Challenge. The evidence against him was that he advertised a £3,000 fortnight-long course in firearms training in the US. Further, it was claimed that the site had links to banned groups Harkatul Mujahideen. A copy of Osama bin Laden's 1998 fatwa against the US and her allies was also found in a police raid at the chef's home. Although the prosecution stressed that Zain al-Abidin was not an al-Qaeda member, the security firm was a front or veil for the pursuit of jihad against the perceived enemies. The prosecution asserted that 40 anti-terrorism officers were working on this case 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, over 55 countries. The irony is that after such thorough investigations, such scarce evidence was retrieved which failed to persuade the court. As Zain al-Abidin put it, now I've appeared in the highest court in the land, and what heavy evidence have they produced? What was in my house all the time? I'm their trophy, I'm their prize. The campaign against Zain al-Abidin was spearheaded by pro-Zionist Andrew Dismore, a Labour MP whose comments in the press led Zain al-Abidin to initially complain to the police. Further, after the case was dismissed, Dismore again commented to the press how the result was a disappointment. This raises serious concerns about the implementation of the anti-terrorism legislations which are led and unduly influenced by politicians who have no basis to make these allegations. Reliance on such information without verification places enormous powers in the hands of such organizations to unduly influence arrests and prosecutions and subsequently miscarriages of justice. Prosecution under other legislation. The case, for example, of Sheikh Faisal. Sheikh Faisal was arrested on February 18th this year. He faced a sentence of up to life imprisonment if found guilty of the charge soliciting to murder under Section 4 of the Offences Against the Person Act 1891, on the basis that on or before February the 18th this year, he encouraged others to murder persons unknown. He was initially refused bail and was held in custody, but was later released on bail on 21st August this year, after the prosecution failed to hand over evidence they intended to use to his lawyer. He is currently awaiting trial. Now, what do we conclude from all this? All the cases seeking to extradite, prosecute suspected terrorists and Islamic militants have so far failed on the grounds of insufficient evidence. What is perhaps remarkable about the various cases outlined above is that such weak evidence even led to the arrest, let alone detention and trial of these persons. In the extradition case, the arrests were based on US intelligence. In the case of Zain al-Abidin, the arrest and trial were initiated by a politician. This raises concerns that arrests are not motivated by evidence, but by politics. It is essential that changes are made in the way the UK authorities have conducted their war on terrorism. They should not rely on assumptions of guilty till proven innocent. Otherwise, civil liberties and standard of justice will have been eroded for no reason whatsoever, except to fuel and be fueled by prejudices and phobias.